Good morning and welcome to our Tuesday edition of the Roundtable. It is the 6th of August and we have a fine panel assembled as we always try to do here on the Roundtable. Alan Chartok is at the head of the table. Good morning, sir. How are you?
This is the head?
Yeah. We got a telephone book for you as well.
That's funny. Yeah, there you go.
Sit right on that. You'll be fine. We'll see you.
the gravelly, reassuring, loving tones coming from the other corner of the room are from our good friend Ray Graff. Good morning, Raymond.
Good morning, boys and girls. Sit down. Here comes your story. Shut up.
And the associate editor of the Times Union newspaper, who for some reason challenges his credibility every time he walks through the door, Mike Spain. Good morning, Mike. Good to have you here.
Good morning.
A delight to have you here as always. Let us begin with a huge story, and it kind of dovetails into another story, which is basically major newspapers in this country being sold. News out of both Seattle, Washington, and Washington, D.C. Yesterday was that Jeffrey Bezos, who is the CEO of Amazon, wrote a check for $250 million cash money for the Washington Post. And this is the first, this obviously takes the paper out of, this is a long time family newspaper in the Graham family for years and
four generations at least.
Generations and will now be removed from that. Mr. Bezos, who is 49 years old, said that he would be leaving the day-to-day operations of Amazon. He would be leaving the day-to-day operations of the Washington Post to others, and also made the point that this was his purchase personally and had nothing to do with Amazon purchasing the paper. But it's a huge move. It comes after, of course, the Boston Globe being purchased by one of the owners of the Boston Red Sox. And so is this good news or is this bad news for newspapers, which we have always had that label for, not always, but over the last few years anyway, the label of troubled? Mike Spain, I'll give that to you first.
I think it's being regarded as hopeful, positive news. Jeff Bezos is known for disruptive technology. You know, he's been one of the disruptors that has kind of realigned the dot-coms and realigned the media business. It'll be in the hand, the newspaper will be in the hands of a guy who's very successful at business. He has brought Amazon.com up and become a billionaire in the process. One interesting thing is that, you know, Amazon both deals in digits, you know, like digital music, digital books, digital, you can download movies, but it also is committed to getting you actual physical objects delivered to your house. You know, if you need clothes or you need toothpaste, you can order it on Amazon.com.
Or books,
real physical books.
Right.
That's right. So it does recognize.
And if you do it through our website, we get a cut of it.
Oh, okay.
Can't say that.
No, I'm not allowed to say that?
Dear FCC.
All right, check that back.
Don't bother me.
All right.
But we'll walk that back. But anyways. So, and you know, it comes when the Washington Post.
I thought we said that legally.
The cops are outside the door.
Damn it.
You know, the Washington Post has really been, embroiled in the same financial problems that newspapers as an industry have been caught up in. You know, the movement of classified advertising to online has really hit newspapers. People are able to consume their news on the internet and don't have to buy the physical newspaper anymore, and they haven't been able to turn that around. There's a lot of anticipation that if anybody can figure out how to do it, it might be somebody like Jeff Bezos.
But, you know, Joe, I think there's something else here, and that is the matter of character. Who are these guys who are buying these two newspapers? And frankly, both of them, if you read between the lines, under the lines, their background, they seem to be fairly decent people who are committed, who have a social commitment to doing the right thing. And I think in both of these cases, I think everything Mike just said is on the money. The fact that, you know, this is Mr. Digital and everything is going digital, and a lot of people say you won't be holding a newspaper 5 years, 10 years.
He has said that. Yeah,
yeah,
himself,
right.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. It's probably best because I, you know, I pay for the New York Times subscription and I read it every day, 3 times a day. I haven't had a physical paper in my hands.
Oh, really?
No. My wife, the lovely Roselle, she'll buy the paper because she still likes the feel of it. But I read it. I read it online, and there are some real differences between reading it online and reading the newspaper. But in any case, I like the idea that these guys, both of them seem to be the kind of people who will not ruin it for the sake of ruining it, or they're not Rupert Murdochs who have, you know, just an obvious editorial bent that they want put out there. So I agree with you. I think it's hopeful.
Yeah, I mean, Seattle is full of billionaires, you know, yeah.
And coffee and fish.
And coffee and fish, right. Yeah. But billionaires. Yeah. They're all over the place from Microsoft and Amazon and other big companies. And a lot of them are fairly young. They're in their late 30s and 40s, and they have turned to, very public-minded second chapters in their careers, and they're doing things like investing in museums, investing in education,
exactly.
Investing in community
exactly.
things. And you know, it is an intellectual shift, you know, with
exactly.
a lot of the power moving away from the East Coast, perhaps, and it being, although he says he's not going to be involved in day-to-day operations. He and his wife have given money to political causes, both Democrats and Republicans. They donated $2 million to the effort to get the same-sex marriage approved, successful effort in the state of Washington. So, you know, they do have politics, but I think you're right. I don't think this is like Jeff Bezos wanting to be Rupert Murdoch. And lose
be
money.
Read in the White House.
Right. Losing money on his newspaper like the New York Post while he's using it to influence public policy and whatever. You know, I think it sounds like from everything the Grahams say, and, you know, they were in their announcement yesterday saying they're doing this to
they
save
go back
the paper
to
they love.
Crackers.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, nice. they do.
I got it. I'm with you.
But the Grahams have shepherded this company through crises like, you know, the Pentagon Papers, which was threatening to the life of the newspaper.
Bet.
And they survived. And then they delivered Watergate and they toppled Richard Nixon. And they're just they've won Pulitzers up and down, you know. They're
near the yin yang.
Whatever, you know.
And this will hopefully continue that, and even though the Grahams won't operate it. Although Catherine Weymouth will stay on as publisher, she is a descendant of the Graham family. You know.
Mm-hmm. Still have a hand.
I wonder if he will change his tune, you know, his public tune that no one will hold a newspaper in 5 years now that he owns a newspaper.
I think he said 20.
Oh, 20. pushing it back a bit, eh?
But he's also said other things. A lot of people say things one day and then say something another day that
sure.
could be regarded as contradictory. So I don't know.
And he's purchased other media entities in the past. So this is obviously the biggest purchase, and certainly because it's the Washington Post, the most noted.
But one other thing, Joe, because imagine he takes $250 million out of his pocket and says, here.
Yeah, cash.
That's like you're taking $5 out of your pocket. That's what's so beautiful about this.
Yeah.
Some people have a lot of money. And some people, unlike other people, but unlike some other people, but like some other people, they are...
About whom are we speaking?
No, are we keeping?
Let me get my decoder ring set.
They are capable of taking $250 million out of their pocket and spending it well.
Yeah.
For good, as you have indicated, Mike. Good reason.
Now, not everyone is as rosy on this. There is some cynicism. Dennis Johnson, co-founder of Melville House, a well-regarded small publisher, said it's a boring old story. Rich man buys a newspaper, but in this instance, it's one of the richest men ever buying one of the most important newspapers ever, which is one our government leaders read first thing every morning. This is the capper in the development of one of the most powerful vertical monopolies in our history, which is also one of the most controlling in matters of cultural concern.
To which I say, details, details.
I want to throw something out at both Mike and Alan. Alan, you just said something about owning it for good. In other words, owning a paper for good.
Not for good, not forever.
For the cause of good. Right, and that's
like
that's my
ranger.
Point. Now, should, in the perfect world, an owner of a newspaper be involved in any agenda, good or bad? Is the news not the news? Are the facts not the facts?
Oh, I think that historically, newspaper owners, newspaper publishers have been activists and have fostered good and bad over the years. Well, you know,
should and is are two different propositions.
Well, that's why I said should and not is.
Don't point your finger at me.
I think the test would be whether the publisher would allow the editorial department to maintain independence and tell both sides of the story. The Washington Post had an extensive coverage of this yesterday and today, of course, and a lot of it did talk of the unfavorable, side of it, and it did talk about Jeff Bezos's, fights with states over sales tax and gobbling up small companies. You know, it told it all. As long as a publisher allows the news, all of the news, to be presented and doesn't tilt the news itself, the coverage, it can, on the editorial page, take a position. I think there's room for that. Many publishers have made great contributions to communities by, leading efforts that have benefited the whole community.
I would just point out, as a fight I have with your associate, your colleague, associate, Rex Smith, and that is that on the New
York, my boss, too, by the way.
On the New York Times, I don't think anybody ever has to go into the Times newsroom and say, okay, boys, this is the approach we're going to take on something like Westway, for which it's an old story, but which Sidney Shanberg apparently lost his head because he took a negative viewpoint on that. So I'm simply saying, the Times, when they hire somebody, they know who they're hiring, and that person fits in very well with the Times Weltanschauung.
Oh.
There you go again, Alan. Worldview, and therefore nobody ever has to issue orders. But
I don't think you can say Weltanschauung.
No, get the 7 second delay. We still have a second. You make a point, though. Well, all silliness aside, you make your point.
Thank you, Ray. Yeah. It's very big of you.
But now, at the case of say a newspaper that's owned by the Hearst Corporation.
Mm-hmm.
So do you feel, you don't feel that pressure, right?
No, I've said this to people who I had a guy call up one time when I was the city editor years ago. He was from the town of Colony, which for 100 years had been Republican. It's now Democratic, by the way, but that's Democrat controlled. But
I remember when that happened.
But anyway, he called up and he was a candidate who had not done very well. And he said, I know it. It's the right-wing Hearst Corporation. And I go, the people in New York really don't care who wins a race in a town or colony. What they care about is that we're successful as a business. And I think that that's an interesting point. It's a good segue. When corporations own media, they really want it to be successful. They're less involved in the day-to-day operations as long as the property, whether it's a newspaper, a radio station, a TV station, returns a profit. But Jeff Bezos, he may not require as much profit, and he may give the Washington Post more leeway to try different things in that struggle to find a successful business model that we all hope will emerge to sustain this news gathering effort.
And if it doesn't, he can write it off on his taxes.
Well,
I want to continue in this conversation because we haven't talked about the Boston Globe and John Henry and the sale there, and I would like to tie that in as well. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back and we'll discuss that. We welcome your input as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back after this short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Veterinary Emergency and Specialty Hospital, South Deerfield, Massachusetts, providing ophthalmology, surgery, and internal medicine services for dogs and cats, now offering laser eye surgery, VESHDeerfield.com. Lotus Fine Art and Design, Woodstock, reverse painted glass lighting, artisan crafted jewelry, and gifts for all occasions, paintings, and custom framing. LotusWoodstock.com. Mark Lawson Antiques, Saratoga Springs and Colony, New York, purchasing estate jewelry, coins, silver, fine arts, and collections. Sponsor of Antiques Roadshow, MarkLawson.com. And Cafe Capriccio, offering dining and catering with Tuscan cuisine in Albany, New York, and Neapolitan cuisine in Saratoga Springs. CafeCapriccio.com for reservations.
Now a man that invented the steam drill, he thought he was mighty fine. But John Henry drove 15 feet, and the steam drill only made 9, Lord, Lord. Steam drill only made 9. I said the steam drill only made
John Henry hammered in the mountains. His hammer was striking fire, but he worked so hard.
Yeah, get it? Get it? John Henry, we were talking about Jeff Bezos and his purchase of the Washington Post. And I want to spend a few minutes before we go over to NPR News and talk about John Henry purchasing the Boston Globe. This is 3 days ago. The Red Sox owner agreed to buy the newspaper from the New York Times Company. He here again, this is another... another individual, another billionaire businessman who has come and said that, has come forward and say, I want to save this paper. I want to see this paper go. John Henry, 63 years old, and met yesterday with senior management at the Boston Globe and spent time with the editors yesterday working on several aspects of the deal. The Times Company said early Saturday morning that the company had agreed to sell the Globe, its websites, the Worcester Telegram and Gazette, and other assets to Henry for $70 million, which I guess if you compare that to the Washington Post is a deal, right?
Well, it's quite a deal since 20 years ago, the New York Times paid $1.1 billion to acquire the Globe.
Mm.
You know, but the New York Times had made no secret that it was trying. It tried a couple times to find a buyer for the Boston Globe.
Well, there were seven bidders apparently on this thing.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So if this was perhaps...
Including some who offered them more money.
Yeah, right. But they had a sense of responsibility.
Yes.
Which is good.
Yeah, I mean, that was part of their mission, to put it in local hands and also to concentrate on their own core mission. You know, they used to own a lot more papers than New York Times, and they've sold their community papers all over the country because they really want to focus on their main product.
They should.
Yeah, and this is a smart part of the change that a newspaper, the newspaper industry is making to succeed, you know.
I don't want to stick the knife in, but... Better they should have figured that out before rather than later.
Yeah. There's a lot of coulda, woulda, shouldas, yeah. You know, especially all the people that said, let's put everything on the internet for free.
Yeah.
You
know, that didn't...
you're not for that then?
Well, it in hindsight, it probably could be regarded as a tactical error.
Yeah.
So is there something to be made about these papers? And I think Ray brought up a good point about when were these always sort of on the market, these papers?
Yeah, I guess the Washington Post.
That was a secret.
That was a secret. It was, yeah. They were looking for buyers. They were they had hired a company, you know, a financial company to evaluate what it would cost and or what it would be worth and go out and try to find the right buyer. You know, it is coming at a time when in the last several months, Warren Buffett has purchased newspapers. You know, there is definitely a shift going on, and probably it will continue. I don't know how. I mean, as we said, the New York Times had made no secret. They were trying to really shed these other properties that they acquired 20 years ago and more and really change the way they do business. So that wasn't a surprise that the Graham family would give it up in an effort to kind of save the Washington Post, which is the way this is being portrayed in Washington with Jeff Bezos. You know, that's different. You know, they want to see it succeed, and they know they have failed at finding that business model. And they're hoping that he does. And I think everybody's looking for that. In Boston, you know, it's somebody who has a big stake in the community. It'll be locally owned and operated.
And if he does as well with that as he did with the Red Sox and pours money into it, that would be great.
He'll get some good press out of the paper as well for the Red Sox.
Somebody will make a movie out of it, Money Game.
Well, do you think that they're going to have deferential coverage to the Red Sox?
Well, they do anyway.
Right.
But, it was the first apartment he visited. He walked in that door yesterday and
boys,
went right to the sports apartment.
Thanks for all you've done.
Henry, in purchasing, you know, who just purchased the Boston Globe or is in the process of closing the deal on the Boston Globe, is probably watching more closely than anybody Jeff Bezos and what happens with, the Boston Globe with the New York, with the Washington Post. I keep saying the wrong name here. But the new purchaser of the Boston Globe is probably watching what's going on in Washington very closely in order to learn what he can, because I think everybody wants to see it work.
We're going to take a break, an NPR news break. When we come back, we'll talk about other big stories in the news. We always welcome your thoughts Roundtable at WAMC.org. Next up, we'll talk about the MLB suspending 13 players for doping, including Alex Rodriguez. That coming up after the short break. Welcome back to the Roundtable panel. I'm Joe Donahue, along with Alan Chartok, Ray Graff, and Mike Spain, the associate editor of the Times Union. We want to get to some other stories, including the MLB suspending Alex Rodriguez and 12 others for doping. That decision yesterday. Before we do, just a quick email from our dear friend Andy Borowitz of The New Yorker and Borowitz Report fame, and he said, Joe, here's what really happened with Jeff Bezos. He says, this is the article from the Borowitz Report. Jeff Bezos, the founder of Amazon.com, told reporters today that his reported purchase of the Washington Post was a gigantic mix-up, explaining that he had clicked on the newspaper by mistake. I guess I was just kind of browsing through their website and not paying close attention to what I was doing, he said. No way did I intend to buy anything. Mr. Bezos said he had been oblivious to his online shopping error until earlier today when he saw an unusual charge for $250 million on his American Express statement. After investigating with a credit card company, he was informed that he had been charged for the purchase price of the entire Washington Post, which he said was pure craziness. No way in hell would I buy the Washington Post, he said. I don't even read the Washington Post.
And think of all the free miles he got out of that.
Yeah, go to the moon and back.
I remember Johnny Carson saying that Bob Hope bought the L.A. Times, and everyone just stopped, and he said, for a quarter or a dime, whatever it was back then. You know?
Right. Well, thanks to Andy Borowitz, and very, very funny stuff, and you can go to the Borowitz Report through The New Yorker and read the whole article. It's very, very funny. All right, let us go to some baseball news, and we touched on this with former Commissioner Faye Vinson on Thursday. Yeah, Thursday.
Mm. Oh yeah,
and talked about this issue, waiting for the penalty to be announced, and here it is. Alex Rodriguez was among 13 players suspended by Major League Baseball on Monday for violating the league's anti-doping rules, the biggest single-day drug action in the sport's history. Rodriguez is planning to appeal his ban, which would begin Thursday and would be for 211 games through the 2014 season, by far the longest levied by the league for a doping violation. The league cited his use and possession of numerous forms of prohibited performance-enhancing substances over many years. As baseball announced its sanctions, Rodriguez, the Yankees' high-profile third baseman, was preparing to make his major league debut for this season Monday night against the Chicago White Sox, who has been recovering from he's been recovering from hip surgery and a quadriceps strain, and is eligible to play until his appeal is heard by an arbitrator, meaning that he can probably play out the season.
Maybe. I mean, you'll see how quickly they move. Major League Baseball, I think, wants to get this behind them as quickly as possible. Oh, and you remember, if this ban sticks, guy's 38. If he doesn't play next year, I think you may have seen the last of him.
Can I ask a question that just as a sports fan, I don't understand? Okay. And that is, you're saying that this is the worst fine that we have ever levied. This is the biggest ban we've ever had in baseball. And you're still going to let this guy on the field. And that's what I don't understand.
I'll take the contrarian position here. You know what? He has never been suspended. First offense, 50 games. So all of a sudden now, they're going to throw a year and a half at this guy, or, you know, 211 games?
Well, that was because he tried to obstruct the investigation. Not the others only had 50 game suspensions.
They all took those suspensions,
right,
and said, okay, we'll take those.
They were contrite. They admitted it. They said they were wrong. He's not doing that.
Don't get me wrong. I don't want to see the guy back. But if I'm the union, I say, I got a strong case here. we're going to fight this and knock it down a lot.
The commissioner could have asserted, doesn't he have the right to assert, in the interest of baseball, he could have just done this unilaterally and there would be no appeal. So he did give him the right to challenge it. I mean, you know, it wasn't the worst one. I mean, wasn't that what Pete Rose got, the worst one ever?
But he was already
lifetime ban, but for this one for doping and not for gambling. But the question being, how do you then say, this is horrible, we want to make an example of this guy, and by the way, he'll be on the field tonight.
They booed him when he came.
Oh, yeah, did you watch?
Well, yeah.
It was warmly received by the fans.
I would have booed him. I mean, it just seems to me that if the guy is under a cloud of suspicion. Now, look, I'm not going against the innocent until proven guilty, but if you're going to make such a big deal and your whole argument is we want to make an example out of this guy, why do you let him on the field to play for the remainder of the season possibly?
Part of the negotiation process.
It probably will up their ratings, which have been in the decline for several years. It's good to talk about another industry that has some kind of audience decline.
Wow. Very touchy. Interesting.
But, some are arguing that they're making a scapegoat out of him because they're trying to reverse that image. They're trying to take a stand, and they're using him to do it. And yet,
I would argue that, but I don't think it's fair. In other words, if you had included him on the list of the 50 gamers, or maybe 60 for being a little bit obscure about the whole thing, then I would say, okay, but obviously this is the loss leader that they've been looking for, to say, okay, you guys get 50 games and he gets 200 and something. I mean, that seems to me to be a little out of proportion.
But it was different, though. His situation was
everything's different, Michael.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Well, I mean, I think everything is different when you have the highest paid, that he is the highest paid player in baseball makes it different, right? I mean, isn't that what we're talking about? That's what makes it different.
Well, what makes it different is they think if they can do it with him, everybody say, whoa, look at that. These guys have really, come down.
Right. But as Mike said, it's not just the drugs. If it was just the drugs, then...
Oh, it's always the cover-up, too.
Well, and it's the cover-up and then the obstruction to the investigation. Yeah,
that's the cover-up.
Right.
Yeah.
And there were allegations, I think, and I don't know how founded they were, that he was sort of, perhaps not knowingly or consciously, a conduit for new business for this guy in Biogenesis.
Right.
So maybe that's part of what Bud Selig is doing, although I'm not sure Bud Selig knows what he's doing.
I agree with you. I agree with you.
Well, I mean, the Yankees, it's an unusual situation that when you would hear Rodriguez, field questions from reporters, he would sort of, in an obtuse way, be suggesting that the management, some other forces don't want me playing, suggesting that might be the Yankees themselves.
Yeah.
So they don't have to pay him. They could use the money for other things. They could buy balls and bats and hire other people to play ball.
Yeah, and I think this is a huge part of what the defense is going to be. It's one of those conspiracy cases.
Right.
A one-armed man did this, like on The Fugitive.
And yet they need him. They're trying to come out of a slump. They lose 8-1 last night.
Yeah, clearly they can stink with him. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't matter.
The other question here is just this was when we were talking to Faye Vinson last week. He was talking about the big mistake that Pete Rose, he felt, one of the big mistakes that Pete Rose didn't made in this was he didn't say he was sorry. He wasn't humbled or contrite by any means during the initial attack of, okay, this is what we're going to do to you. In watching and seeing the press conference with A-Rod yesterday, I saw it termed several times that he was smug. I would personally agree with that.
Did you see it?
Yeah. I mean, I would agree with that. I would agree with that. He seemed to be very, very smug. And I don't know if that makes a difference. And again, the man certainly deserves his day in court. But it is. It seems to be playing a game with Major League Baseball that I don't know.
Well, there's another side to this, guys. That I think, I'm not nearly as eloquent about baseball or anything else as you guys are. But it seems to me that you say, okay, everybody's in, as Ray keeps saying, as you just said, innocent until proven guilty. And when the judge sentences you, he slams down the thing, and he says, but because you were not properly, you know,
we didn't read your rights.
Therefore, you go to jail for another 10 years. I'm not saying jail in the case of Rodriguez, but I'm
saying
the
penalty will be worse.
There's something that's not quite kosher.
I think you're onto something, because when Pete Rose
was, and I know it's rare
for me to say that, and I think I've said it twice this week, and I'm going to stop saying that you're onto something. But
don't encourage him.
When Pete Rose was charged with this, he denied it.
Yes.
And he also fought it. And so why would he say, if he's denying doing it, why would he say, I'm sorry I did it? I don't understand. That was one thing I didn't understand then. I didn't understand when Faye Vincent brought it up. Why would Pete Rose say, gosh, I'm sorry, but I didn't do it? Yeah. I mean, it's ridiculous. You can't do one and the other.
No, you can't.
Unless you contradict yourself and say, I was lying before and I've come clean and I was wrong. Mm. And, you know, and then you really hurt your own image. And that's difficult for people to do. Yeah.
But the press conference was surreal with A-Rod. And, you know, clearly the guy has a team of 8 lawyers or however many lawyers. He has been well coached not to say certain things. So I think some of that smugness we saw was him being very careful not to go over the line.
Well, one thing is not to comment. The other is to say forces are want something
that's
else.
Great defense. I mean, that,
but it may be true. In other words, he may have taken the steroids, but it may also be true that there are the forces who want to get something.
Oh, I think especially if he's damaged goods because of his reputation and because he's injured, that that they would love to get out of this contract.
Well, it's $100 million contract.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. $100 million left? Is that what
left,
it is?
About $100 million left. It was $246 million altogether back when he was a young man.
And we'll see. I'm sure that, you know, the word in the New York tabloids for a long time is the Yankees have been trying to get out of that contract. And there is really no way that we've seen. So but A-Rod, of course, is missing the point. If he's saying, well, the Yankees and Major League Baseball are colluding to get me out of here without paying me, that still doesn't get away from what he did.
If they were colluding, they probably would have given him a lifetime ban in the interest of the game, as the commissioner of baseball has the right to do. And he didn't do that, so in many ways, he was pretty fair.
But he's 38 plus. A year and a half. Now he's 40, hasn't played essentially in 2.5 years. That's a lifetime ban.
And he wants his $100 million, by the way. That's
what it's all about, man.
Yeah, that is what it's all about. Let us talk about some other issues. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back and finish up our conversation this morning. We always welcome your input, roundtable at WAMC.org, or you can go on Facebook, or you can go on Twitter, or all of those great social media sites we are a part of. WAMC.org or our website if you want immediate access, and we'll be back after this short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Sunwood Builders Amherst, over 20 years of green and custom home building, offering home remodeling services and energy retrofits. Working to save energy while maintaining design features, sunwood-builders.com. Healthy Living Market and Cafe, featuring the Divine Wine Store with wines from all over the world with pairings, monthly tastings, and events. HealthyLivingMarket.com. Saugerties Furniture, Saugerties, family-owned for 65 years, 4 floors of American-made living room, bedroom, and dining furniture, open daily, SaugertiesFurniture.com. And the office of Dr. Vivian Letizia, Woodstock, orthodontic, cosmetic, and general dentistry, featuring laser and digital technologies, WoodstockDentist.com.
Welcome back to our roundtable panel this morning. Alan Chartok, Ray Graff, Mike Spain, and myself, and we welcome you to our discussion. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We're talking about a myriad of issues this morning, and we go to a New York issue, and that is a look at where all that money that we're supposed to be getting out of politics is coming from.
Well, Jimmy Vilkind, our Capitol reporter, who
Ace
Capitol reporter.
Ace Vilkind.
Ace Vilkind, our Capitol reporter, raises a good question today, and that is that in order to get money out of politics to make it so it's more even, an even playing field, you got to spend a lot of money.
Yeah.
You know, and Jonathan Soros, the son of George Soros, the billionaire, Jonathan has quite a bit of money himself. He's behind an effort to get public financing of political campaigns in New York State. Now, Alan, is that a good idea, public financing?
Oh, yes. It's a very good idea. Unfortunately, as long as, I mean, imagine you were sitting in the New York State legislature and you were in the majority party and people were showing up at your, quote, fundraisers and giving you a ton of money to do it. Tell me that you are absolutely sure. Now, remember, you have a lie detector cuff on your arm. You are absolutely sure you'd go along with it. The Democrats in the Assembly always say they'll go along with it. But somehow it becomes a one-house bill, and it doesn't get there. Now, New York City has public financing, and it works. It works very well. And by all accounts, I'm going to modify that to mostly all accounts. and it works very well. We have a legislature that is not about to have initiative and referendum, because if they did, they'd be out on their keisters in no time at all, because we would have term limits, as they do in New York City. You say to the people in New York State, should there be term limits? Maybe not about my guy, but everybody else. Yeah, we should have that. So they're not going to have initiative and referendum. They're not going to have, which would lead to that. They're not going to have campaigns that are paid for. I think it is a very good idea. And I think Soros is putting a million or 100 million? What is it?
Yeah, quite that much, it's but he's putting up like about a million, 1.1 million.
Yeah. Well, that's a lot of money, but it's also chump change. And by doing it, he makes the point that this is important. I've interviewed him here. We've had him on our air. He's a passionate guy who believes in this, and he's right.
But conservatives might say, well, look, this is the height of hypocrisy. George Soros dumps, Mike Long says at the end of Ace Vielkind's piece, quotes Mike Long as saying, you know, why should taxpayers have money stolen out of their pockets by government and given to campaigns who may be working against them? The Working Families Party is clearly not a friend of the taxpayer, and neither is Jonathan Soros. And conservatives for years are saying, liberals rail against the Koch brothers and the money they put in. But George Soros plays the same game, man. And so,
to what end, though? Mr. Ray? I mean, that's the whole point.
Well, you can debate that with Mike Long.
Egalitarianism. Well, Mike Long, I mean, we've had him on, too. And we know where he's coming from. He's defending the vested interest, the people with a lot of money.
But is George Soros not also a vested interest?
No. I mean, we were talking before. You know, Ray, you just get me infuriated.
Being a contrarian,
Not really. We were talking before about how two guys were buying newspapers probably out of a sense of public good and spending a lot of money for it. There's a big difference between spending money so that a few rich guys on the top, the 1% or the 1%ers, can keep their money, and another guy who really wants to have egalitarianism.
But isn't it all only different because you like one guy and you don't like the other guy?
Not at all.
Going back to the issue of whether there should be public financing, you seem to imply that the Assembly was disingenuous by passing it, but it will never make it through the Republican or the coalition that controls the state Senate. So, it's,
which is why it gets very complicated. Right. You have Andrew Cuomo with $29 million, I believe, and last counting, in his campaign account. He says he's for it. But he did a very interesting thing. He kept the Republicans in control of the New York State Senate, because if the Democrats were in control of the New York State Senate, this would be a done deal. Are you following me, Michael?
Oh, well, yeah, yes. I hear what you're saying. What's the criticism of the Assembly?
The Assembly can have their cake and eat it.
Right, they can.
Or as the Statler brothers said, their cake and Edith.
All right.
Okay, so
thanks for the Statler brothers reference.
Yeah, there you go.
Now the show is complete. Good stuff. Roll the credits. We're done.
No, but that's my view, that it's, look, these guys in the assembly got there under the old system. You think they really want Joe the bartender coming out and saying, okay, I'm going to run if I can get public money for it? They don't really want that. They want to be who they are, but they say they want it, and they're confident that the other house, as long as it's Republican, will say no, and then they have their way.
They get to look good, but they don't have to live by it.
Right. And that, and our politics, our legislative politics, are replete with that nonsense.
Mm-hmm. Anybody want to?
I'm staying out of this one.
Okay. I guess that's the
well,
final
you could say
word
something
on
like
that.
Some would say.
Well, I'll just let you and Mike fight it out.
I
don't know that I'm disagreeing with you. I'm just trying to understand your, for clarity.
Verbosity.
Yes.
Did it work?
Yeah, I think I get it.
Okay.
Thank you, Professor.
Looking for clarity.
There'll be a test next week, and I think I'll do okay.
Pass out the blue book.
In our final moments here on the on our roundtable panel, let us talk about an old hotel in downtown Albany that in a vision could be restored. It could bring people to the capital region, and it could bring a basketball tournament.
Now, you know,
that's
it's
right.
A Democratic hotel. Always was.
Well,
it was.
The Marriott?
DeWitt. Yeah, it was always Democratic. I was called, summoned by Stanley Steingut to come and visit upon him in his room at rooms at the DeWitt with his lovely wife there. And we had a nice discussion, and I remember it as the Democratic Hotel.
Well, you know, this hotel, it's an historic structure in downtown Albany. It's going to become a new venue, a Marriott, and it's going to be right next to the site that was just unveiled last week for the downsized Albany County Convention Center. It also is within walking distance of the Times Union Center, which is making a bid in a couple of weeks now to host a NCAA regional event. And one of the issues was whether there was adequate hotel space within walking distance and between this.
But this is going to be very upscale.
Yeah, it's going to be upscale, but it'll be there, and it'll fulfill the requirement. It's right across the street from the Capitol. We'll see what party.
Lobbyists will stay there.
Right, and it has a beautiful lobby, by the way, that they have promised to keep. Just an ornate lobby.
Yeah.
You know, this is a great historic structure. You know, it was turned into, apartments, and then it's pretty much abandoned now, and they've been looking for a development plan, and this is the one that everybody's getting behind, the mayor is getting behind it, and it looks like everything is coming together to sort of fit with this new civic center, and although downscaled somewhat from the original plan, it looks like it's good for Albany.
And it's a done deal.
It's reported to be a done deal. Yes, when you get Marriott committing $48.5 million, real money, that's not bad.
I mean, are we going to get the aquarium next?
That's another story. That now there's space down where they had wanted to put the gigantic civic center that they've abandoned, and there's space available, and politicians are talking about that, and it's got its support. Corey Ellis, one of the Democratic candidates running in the primary for Albany mayor to succeed Jerry Jennings, is very strongly behind it. He says it's a big part of the city's economic development.
And they could be very close to the other sharks right up the hill.
Hey!
That's a good point.
Shark country.
It is Sharknado.
Shark attack. Sharknado.
Sharknado.
All right.
And on that note, from the grumbling from Ray Graff, I think we're out of time.
Yeah, we're done.
Shark attack.
So you can always weigh in and talk about any of the issues that we discussed. Roundtable@wamc.org. A reminder that Ray and Alan will be back at these microphones at 2 o'clock this afternoon to talk about baseball and steroids and suspensions, and take your phone calls at 2 o'clock this afternoon on Vox Pop. So tune in for that. Mike Spain, as always, it's a pleasure having you here. Thank you very much for sharing your time with us. And gentlemen, we'll see you at 2 o'clock. Thank you very much. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.